This is Living Lab Radio. I'm Heather Goldstone. Coming up this hour, football and dementia. The largest study to date of the brains of deceased football players finds evidence of brain damage in even some high school players. Then, a researcher unlocking the secrets of aging, how it works and what we can do about it. And finally, the geography of desperation. There are strong racial disparities in levels of pain, worry, and optimism in the U.S., but who's better off depends on where you live. First, in between the political scandals and debates last week, you might have heard about a new study of the link between football and a form of brain damage known as chronic traumatic encephalopathy, or CTE. Researchers at Boston University have looked at the brains of more than 200 deceased football players who played at all levels from high school to NFL. Jesse Mez is assistant professor of neurology at Boston University, and he's the lead author of that study in the Journal of the American Medical Association. Jesse Mez, welcome to Living Lab Radio.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Chronic traumatic encephalopathy. What's chronic, the trauma or the brain pathology?
It's the brain pathology. So CTE, or chronic traumatic encephalopathy, is a neurodegenerative disease that is unique but similar in many ways to other neurodegenerative diseases like Alzheimer's disease or Parkinson's disease.
Yeah, so this has really only been described in the past few years. What are the symptoms and how is it typically diagnosed?
Well, so I'll correct you in that it's actually been described, it was initially described as early as 1928. In boxers. And
really?
It really has only garnered attention more recently when it was discovered in NFL football players and now in other types of football players, too.
All right. So we'll cut to the chase here. Your study looked at 202 brains from deceased football players, you know, some from who had played in high school, some who had played in college, semi-pro, and up to the NFL. And bottom line, you've concluded that American football players may be at increased risk of CTE. How great is that risk? Do we know at this point?
So we don't know. And so this study was not designed to be a study of prevalence of CTE in football players in the general population. This is based on our brain bank, which does have selection bias in that those family members who were concerned about their loved one donated. Often those who played more football than the general population of football players donated. So we're able to say that there seems to be this strong association in that other brain banks have looked for this disease for some time and haven't seen it or have seen it rarely. Yet in our brain bank, we see it commonly. And the only major difference between our brain bank and these other brain banks is that for eligibility into the brain bank, you need to have exposure to repetitive head impacts, whether it be football or other contact sports, military, et cetera.
While you say this wasn't designed to be a study of the prevalence, if you look at the news coverage that this study has generated, right, the headlines, even the New York Times, 110 of the 111 NFL players' brains who were examined show signs of CTE. Now, that is factually correct, but it seems to suggest that 99% of NFL players have CTE when, in fact, as you've just mentioned, these players' brains were donated in many cases, most cases, because they already showed the symptoms of dementia or mood or behavioral changes. Next of kin may be concerned about the possibility of CTE. And when you take into account the fact that there are, I don't know, at least 1,500 players in the NFL any given year, I mean, you've confirmed CTE in, what, less than 10% of NFL players, not 99. So what can we take away from this about maybe the minimum prevalence or that risk of CTE among football players?
Right. So, I mean, I think those types of calculations that you just mentioned are reasonable to say that's the minimum prevalence in the NFL population. We really have no sense of what the prevalence of this disease is among college players or among high school players. And in a sense, that's the most important because that's when it becomes a public health issue. But it's not an easy question to answer. It really requires a prospective, longitudinal study where we randomly sample from the general population of football players, follow them over time, and then examine their brains when they pass away. So it's a study that we're initiating, that we're excited to conduct, but it's slow going. And so in the meantime, so that we have data and that we can move forward and trying to help those with this disease, we're trying to make our best estimates based on data from our own brain bank. We can do sophisticated statistics so that we can kind of upweight and downweight individuals so that our grouping is more representative of what we would see in the general population, but we're not quite there yet.
One thing that jumps out, the New York Times did, you know, a whole layout of who the people were who had donated their brains for this study. 44 of the NFL players were linemen. Now, again, you've said this isn't, a random or representative cross-section of the entire NFL. But if you assume that, you know, these 110 or 111 NFL players who were showing symptoms or were concerned about CTE, maybe it's a representative sample of the players experiencing CTE symptoms, to have so many of them be linemen maybe suggests that there's not just a risk to playing football across the board, but certain positions carry more risk.
Well, so I think you do have to realize that almost 50% of a football team is linemen. So there are more linemen out there in the general population of football players.
I'm glad you know more about football than I do.
I wasn't initially a big football fan, so this is a bit new. But I would say that so when we look at football helmet sensor data, the linemen hit their heads more than any of the other positions. But the force of the impact is less than some of the speeded players like wide receivers. And whether it's how hard the hits are occurring or the frequency of hits, we're still not completely sure. I will say that a lot of the focus has been on concussion, so that's symptomatic hits. And why symptoms at the time of the hit are necessarily important when this is a disease that's really is a neurodegenerative disease manifesting years later. So it's not really clear why symptoms at the time of hit should be important. It's really probably about the impacts. It's not really about concussions per se.
The players whose brains were part of this study covered a range of ages and presumably times, periods of time when they were playing, both in terms of how long they played, but, you know, when were they playing, in the 70s, the 80s, the 90s, that kind of thing. Do you get any sense from this if the risk has increased over time?
So this is a cross-sectional study. You can only examine a person's brain at one point in time. So those types of questions are hard to answer. You really do need some level of longitudinal data. We can surmise that, so beginning in the 1960s, 1970s was when youth football, Pop Warner football, really began, and kids started playing before high school. So those who have played more recently have played for more years. They started playing when their brains were still at critical times of development. So there definitely have been changes over time, and accounting for those changes is hard, but important.
And while most of the attention resulting from this study has been focused on those 111 NFL players, you do have in the bank the brains of deceased players who only played in high school, only played in college. And in some of those high school-only players, you see at least mild signs of CTE. So potentially some risk or that this could be starting earlier.
Right. I mean, it seems unlikely to me that there is any safe level of play where nobody will have risk of developing this disease. That being said, there is a lot of heterogeneity, meaning you've got a few high school players who haven't had very much exposure but developed this disease, and conversely, you've got at least the one NFL player who played an overwhelming amount of football and did not have the disease, and we see among the NFL players variation in disease severity. So this heterogeneity means that there's probably other risk factors involved, whether it be genetic or other environmental risk factors. And understanding the role of those risk factors is really important, too. I mean, there are potentially things that you can, especially with genetics, there is something you could screen for early on to see which kids would be potentially at risk for this disease.
Since your study came out, two NFL players have announced that they'll be retiring. Baltimore Ravens offensive lineman John Urschel, who incidentally is also a math PhD student at MIT. Rumor is that the reason he's retiring after three seasons is to protect his brain. And then Patriots wide receiver Andrew Hawkins announced his retirement and pledged his brain to research. How do you feel about those responses? Is that what you expected? Is that what you wanted to see?
We thought the paper would get a lot of attention. I don't think we thought it would get quite this much attention. I mean, I think as researchers, our goal is to learn as much as we can and to disseminate that information to as many people as we can, you know, whether it's the professional NFL player or whether it's parents on the sideline. And by getting them as much information as we can, I would hope they can make as informed a decision as possible. So if these players got more information from our study and that impacted their decision-making, I think that's a good thing.
Jesse Mez is the lead author of a new study that confirmed brain damage associated with repeated head trauma in 110 deceased NFL players. That research was published in the Journal of the American Medical Association. Jesse, thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.
If you are a football player yourself or the parent of a football player, we'd like to hear from you. Are you changing your plans in response to this research? You can send us an email at livinglabradio@capeandislands.org, or you can find us on Facebook and Twitter. Up next, a researcher working to unlock the secrets of aging. Living Lab Radio continues after a short break.